Hi, this is Alex Etelander, and welcome to episode 8 of Book Banter. And in this episode, we will have my long but very interesting interview with author Daniel Suarez, and we'll be talking about his book Demon. But first, we'll begin with my review of Demon. Demon by Daniel Suarez. Daniel Suarez has designed and developed enterprise software for the defense, finance, and entertainment industries. He's also an independent systems consultant and an avid gamer. So it's no surprise that in Demon he has created a world and plot that involves all these facets, resulting in a fast-paced, riveting, exciting novel that is a combination of classic Michael Crichton and The Matrix. Demon begins with Matthew Sobel, a renowned computer programmer and video game designer dead from cancer. It is upon his death, when the obituary is posted online, that the dormant demon is unleashed upon the world. In this world, just like our own, everything is automated and computerized. Banking, transportation, defense, government, patient records. There are few things remaining off the grid. The demon works fast and incredibly efficiently, beginning a systematic takedown of technology and world systems, causing deaths and the collapse of companies, and a financial meltdown that is scarily similar to our current economic climate. It's up to Detective Sevek and a computer genius, John Ross, to try and stop the demon somehow from destroying everything. Then there is The Grid, the massively multiplayer online role-playing game, in the style of World of Warcraft and Lord of the Rings Online, created by Sobel, where the demon secretly begins recruiting the disaffected but brilliant youth who play the game as part of its efforts to bring down technology and society. Whether you're a gamer, a computer person, a network specialist, an internet aficionado, or just someone who likes books about technology and possibly the end of the civilized world, Demon is the book for you. Expertly written by Daniel Suarez, who knows exactly what he's talking about, Demon is a book that will have you on the edge of your seat from page one to the very end, and waiting for the sequel, Freedom, TM, due out in 2010. And now we move on to my interview with Daniel Suarez. This was actually the first interview I recorded through Skype using the recording software. So there are a few parts where it's a little broken up and not so easy to hear, but it's a good long interview, and he gives a lot of valuable information about how you can protect yourself online.
Thanks for doing the interview with Book Banter.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Okay, my first question is, what made you decide to become a writer, and who were your influences?
Well, actually, I think I've always been a writer. Actually, writing the novel, what made me decide to do that was my professional work. For the last 17 years, have been a systems analyst. I've had my own consultancy here in L.A., and I design big database management systems for large companies. And I have, over the last decade, been increasingly concerned about the centralization and uniformity of our modern infrastructure. And I started wanting to write something about it, an essay, perhaps an op-ed. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized... Nobody would read that, that would be a technical exercise, pretty much. So I decided to write a novel, a high-tech thriller, because I thought it would reach a broader audience, because I wanted to write a cautionary tale that people would actually read. And as for my influences, I definitely think Neal Stephenson would be one. I'm a big Neal Stephenson fan. I know that when I read Snow Crash, that made a big impression on me. But also John Dos Passos, Portuguese-American writer, wrote the America trilogy. Big fan of that. I actually have an English literature degree, so I've done a lot of reading. And J.R. Tolkien, Hemingway, all sorts of influences. But as far as technology, I would say Neal Stephenson.
Okay. And where did the story idea for Demon come from?
That actually came from a piece of software that I wrote a few years ago. And by the way, let me just recap the story so that I can frame that. The story of Demon is about a successful online game designer who creates a computer program that monitors online news for the appearance of his own obituary. And when he dies, this program activates and begins to tear apart the modern world. And that actually was a scenario that concerned me, because the modern world is largely run on information. And it is highly interconnected, and it is also highly automated. So I used real technology in this book. I tried to make it as authentic and accurate as possible. But the idea for the book came about, I'd say back in 1998, perhaps. As a mental exercise, I created a piece of fictional weather software. And what this was it was called WeatherMaster. It was an application that allowed you to create weather patterns for fictional worlds. It had a great orbital mechanics module, too, but it was for role-playing gamers. And I sold this online into 38 countries, and it did pretty well, but it was completely automated where you could download it, try it for 30 days, and then with a click, buy it. And that money would automatically go, you know, from your credit card into my merchant account. And that merchant account was automatically swept to pay for the website and for online advertising. So it was a completely automated system. I didn't have to do anything once it was turned on. And then I got busy on some client projects and came back after a few months, and I found a good deal of money in this account. I started realizing, you know, if I died, this would just keep going. And I thought, well, what else could I do if I'm dead? And as it turns out, you can do a great deal in modern society, even if you're dead. So that's really where the kernel of the idea came from.
And it was originally published under your pseudonym Leonard Zeros, your name reversed. What's the story behind this?
Yeah, that's right. I originally self-published.
I don't know if I pronounced that correctly.
Pen name Leonard Zeros.
Yeah, okay.
No, is there a correct pronunciation? Because it's a fake name. It's simply the letters of my name reversed. So I don't know that there is a pronunciation, but some people would email me saying, are you Czechoslovakian? Are you German? I think gamers got it pretty instantly, because a lot of gamers reverse the letters of their name because their name is already taken in some online game, so they have to figure out some other way. But basically, I did that for two reasons. I'll give you the minor one first. My job as a systems consultant for big companies, and that includes some defense companies, you know, I was writing a book that was about hackers, and I thought, you know, that they might not understand that, so I'd write it under a pen name. But that wasn't the chief reason. The chief reason was as a Google search term. Mm-hmm. Leonard Zeros was terrific because I owned the first 100 pages of the Google search results. And Daniel Suarez, there's hundreds of Daniel Suarez. So it was a good marketing handle. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it worked out pretty well. I could not find actually a publisher for the book because I was not primarily a novelist. I was a systems analyst. So I tried for about a year to get an agent and couldn't do so, and that's when I decided to self-publish.
And what sort of research did Demon require you to do? I mean, I know you've had a lot of experience already, but you obviously had to do some more research in addition to what you already knew.
Well, yeah, in the back of the book, it is a high-tech thriller, but it also encompasses some aspects of biology, in particular that of parasites. There was a great book written by a guy named Carl Zimmer called Parasite Rex. There's also a number of issues covering economics. Global economics, manufacturing, machinery, weaponry, and on and on. I did a great deal of research on the cutting edge of technology, physical hardware systems. You know, that's something I'm interested in anyway. So I had, for a number of years, been accumulating articles and white papers on technologies that I thought would be transformative, that when combined in new ways might create unpredictable results or unintended consequences. So that was an ongoing research exercise for me.
And you kind of answered this question earlier, but with the technology used in the book, you said it was all pretty much real. And does all this technology already exist?
Yes, it is. Yes, it does. And that includes, and you know, for those who haven't read the book, there are unmanned vehicles in my book. That is a reality. As a matter of fact, in 2007, I think it was, I went up to Victorville to see DARPA's urban grand challenge, and DARPA is the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. They have been trying to push an effort to create unmanned vehicles that can navigate an urban environment that is normal everyday traffic. And a lot of this is driven by the needs of the Pentagon. They want to make it so that a third of their vehicles are completely unmanned by 2020. And when I went up there and saw these vehicles driving in everyday traffic, it was a complete fake city or town that they made with test drivers driving around in these regular robotic vehicles, had to navigate, use their turn signals and all that other stuff, parallel park. They did everything. And that is something that I think a lot of people would be surprised about, as well as some of the automation of finance and other aspects of society. I think a lot of people have no idea how much of society is automated. And I wanted to open a window to that in this book.
Okay. Have there been any offers to option Demon for the big screen?
On January 14th, Demon was on the cover of Hollywood Reporter
Ooh.
Because it was announced that Walter Parks, the producer of Men in Black and Gladiator, and also the co-writer of War Games, had optioned Demon for the film rights. And Paramount Pictures is developing it.
And do you know when expected release date is or anything like that? Or is it still...
If you go onto IMDb, it says 2012. Although the truth is, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Certainly a lot of action going on in the finance sector right now.
Right, definitely.
I think I just read an article that Hollywood has lost a lot of its funding. I'm hopeful, though, because I do think... See, I look at that financial meltdown, and that's something that was sort of discussed in my book.
That's actually a later question I have for you. Actually, it's a couple of questions down. Yeah,
oh, well, then like, I'll leave it. We'll talk about that a little later.
Okay. And then on the Demon website, you've got a lot of technology links, and you also have the Demon Technology News Feed. Can you talk a little about this and why you do this?
Well, I do that. I both have these links. The permanent links are ones that I think are very important. They're either windows to aggregators that talk about the impact of upcoming technologies. And for my newsfeed, I try to bring to set a spotlight onto technology that I think could have a transformative effect on society. I think the takeaway from my book is that it's not so much flying cars and robots like the Terminator that are going to change things. I think the changes are going to be subtle, but nonetheless very profound. It's combinations of existing technologies that can really change things. You take a look at these social networks. What new, radically different technology made that possible? You know, IP networks have been around for decades. And yet, with Web 2.0 technologies and these social networks, Facebook and all of these other websites have combined and basically focused social energies. The Obama campaign is a great example of that. So that's an existing technology that just emerged very quickly. Now, I was reading recently that the radio took 38 years to achieve 50 million users, but Facebook got 50 million users in 2 years. And it's that type of rapid acceleration and sudden change that technology can cause. And so that's why I try to focus on new technology.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you still do a lot of work yourself, right, on this, like doing the newsfeed and things like that?
Oh, yeah, actually, I do all of that myself.
Okay.
I guess I can't rationalize at this point hiring somebody because I just know how to do it. And, you know, it just would seem, you know, if I ever go to the point where I have a staff doing it, I suppose it'll be a little glitzier. But, you know, I have it be very scalable and adjustable to all sorts of screens, and I keep it simple. You know, that's my the principle I follow.
So the events that take place in Demon have some startling similarities to our current economic problems. Was this something purely coincidental or something that you predicted might happen?
Yes, I assure you it was not part of the marketing of the book. So, what I'm writing about in this book is the fragility of the current system and how an over-reliance on automated, centralized, interconnected systems might wreak financial and other havoc. And yet, we take a look at these hedge funds, which largely used to take actions. And I don't know if you're familiar with default credit swaps.
Not so much.
But the idea is that these companies were insuring each other's investments and risk. Mm-hmm. And those risk numbers were developed into a single numeric rating by an algorithm. And that algorithm was used throughout the industry as a purchasing decision benchmark. Now, you think about that, this one consolidated number, these numbers really caused a great deal of trouble because they didn't represent reality. Mm-hmm. And yet, everybody did what the computers told them to do. So that was definitely one of the things I was covering in the book. You know, I wanted it to be a cautionary tale. I guess maybe I'd have written it earlier. Sure enough, you know, we start to see this happening in reality. And believe me, I'm not happy about it. I'm not thrilled that I'm right in this case. But certainly I want people to be aware that in finance, that is just one aspect where this is true.
Right.
And so there are many other industries where I have concerns. So perhaps people will find the book interesting for that, if no other reason.
And did you base the people and companies mentioned in the book on any real people or companies?
No, I did not. And as a matter of fact, a lot of coworkers of mine who've recently found out that, yes, I am a novelist, the first thing they ask me is, who am I? Whose character am I? I very carefully avoided that. The best I can do is that some of the characters are composites, people, but it is not strictly about any of my clients. It's much more about the broader trend of automation and interconnection and centralization. Basically, the development of what I would call a monoculture in our digital and logistical infrastructure, that is a sameness, a uniformity. And that is not the individual responsibility of a single company. It's an overall industry trend.
There are a lot of details in Demon about the massive multiplayer online playing games or MMORPGs. Was this something you had to research, or are you a gamer yourself?
I'm definitely a gamer. Yeah, sure. That's what I was doing research, Michelle. That's my wife. I would spend long hours playing these games. I found them to be fascinating. I tend to tinker with technology I find interesting, and I find computer games very interesting. And I think online games in particular they have a great deal of cultural weight. They've almost become a cultural force. I mean, you look at World of Warcraft, and I don't mean to pick on any particular game, but World of Warcraft is, of course, the biggest. It's got 11 million subscribers. Now, when 11 million people do anything, that's got to be significant. So here we've got 11 million people sitting in front of a screen and participating in a virtual world. That economy actually has a real-world value. But more than that, as it has a real-world value, what's happened is there are people who start to automate the playing of this game. They write bots. Software bots that play the game for you, and there's people who are doing what's called gold farming in places like China, where they are paid to play the game to create wealth in this virtual world and then sell it in the real world. And it's the profit incentive that I think marks the difference between a game and a cultural phenomenon, an economy, essentially. So that right now, I think these games are driving the AI components. I think that's the frontier, basically, of viruses and malicious bots, because a lot of the worms you see out in the world right now, like the Conficker worm, they have what I would call a narrow AI aspect. That is, they react like characters in a game. They react to steps taken to mitigate them, much like an opponent in an online game might. So right now, these people who are writing bots in online games, a lot of those technologies and methods are being pulled into the malware arena. Not the same people, but certainly online games have become a great incubator for this type of technology, mimicking human behavior and fooling people into thinking that you're human.
And do you have a particular favorite MMO you like, or and have you used the Leonard Zeroth character name?
No, I haven't. I haven't. Although, if I think about games, I was not a big World of Warcraft player. I dabbled with it for a while, but that's a huge time commitment. I tend to be somebody who jumps around. Like, I will obsess about a game for a brief period and pretty much exhaust it and then move on. So I would think games like Medal of Honor, Far Cry, Crisis Company of Heroes, I really liked, GTA 4, Neverwinter Nights. Dabbled in World of Warcraft. Of course, I think I still have an avatar in Second Life. I've been in there for a long time. It's not really a game, but I dabble in a lot of different things just so I can keep my finger on the pulse.
And after writing, completing Demon, have you changed any of your internet habits or how you do things online?
Oh, no, I haven't, because I part of the reason I wrote Demon was I was concerned about these things. And, to a certain extent, you can do things that will greatly reduce the risk, your exposure on the web. But when it comes down to it, if the wrong person really want to focus on you and crack into your network, or at least prevent you from operating easily on the internet through a distributed denial of service attack, they could do it. That's the situation with the current TCP/IP infrastructure. It is an inherently open infrastructure. It was designed largely for academic and military purposes initially. So it is inherently open so that it connects people who were expected to be trusted individuals. Mm-hmm. And so it's very difficult after the fact to secure it, although, like I said, you can take steps to do so. But I remember reading that the introduction of a TCP/IP stack into Windows, and I think Windows 95 was the first version of Windows that had it, marked a sudden rise in the spread of malware. And it was because this very, very common operating system suddenly connected to the web by default. And, yeah, you know, I have been really paranoid almost about security for well on a decade now. So I'm very careful about it. So no, okay. Writing this book didn't change the way I do things.
Mm-hmm. But do you have any advice for people who are online a lot that they might be able to protect themselves better?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, I was just talking to another interviewer this morning. He was mentioning that he got a separate computer for his kid so that his kid could, you know, cruise the internet and do things. And I told him, you know, you have to treat a computer, at least for his children, like a bandsaw or some heavy piece of machinery. I mean, it needs some adult supervision.
Right.
Because any computer connected to the internet can do harm not just to you, but also to others. And that is because there is no such thing as an unimportant computer once it's connected to the internet. Mm-hmm. That processor can be harnessed and folded into an army of compromised machines, which can be used to attack government or corporate sites, crack encryption, steal identities, store illegal information, launch distributed denial of service attacks, and all sorts of things. And these groups of computers are botnets. So the whole arc of compromised computers, personal and home and, you know, business computers. And these hacks occur automatically. They're bot-driven. So they're not done by some teenager in a basement somewhere. I think that is the traditional view of hackers. That's not really the risk right now. I think the bigger risk from malware are these sophisticated groups of criminals, these criminal gangs, which write some of the most sophisticated software in the world in an effort to compromise machines. And they distribute this software, and this software continues to propagate itself. It's completely automated. It's pinging all around the internet, finding machines that are connected and poorly secured. And so your own obscurity does not protect you. The fact right. that you don't know anybody who'd want or be interested in your data really isn't the issue. Find your computer is what you want. So I would say keep that in mind.
Right.
And if you're not using a computer, I think it's best to turn it off. Don't leave it on for months at a time. Because if it gets compromised, let's say there's what's called a zero-day exploit. That is an exploit, the details of which have been released, but Microsoft or, you know, Apple or whoever have not been able to create a patch for it yet. That's called a zero-day exploit. Well, if your machine is on and these criminal groups know about this exploit, they can then utilize it,
yep.
and they'll create bots that will scour the internet to find machines that are vulnerable to it. And once you're compromised, you may not notice it, because a lot of these things are sophisticated enough that they will create processes on your machine that are invisible, and you suddenly don't own your machine anymore. So one of the simplest ways I would tell people to avoid a lot of these infections is when you're surfing the internet, use a non-administrator account. Mm-hmm. Basically, every operating system allows us log on with unlimited rights, and you can create a new one, whether you're surfing it. That way, if you go to a malicious website, your account will not have rights to install software. So the worm, even if it hijacks your rights at the time of your surfing, you will not have sufficient rights to do harm. One other thing I'd tell people is to regularly stalk yourself. You know, Google yourself mm-hmm. and your family, and see what information is out there about on the net, because you might be surprised, and then you can take steps to mitigate that risk. And that might include social security numbers, addresses, things that malicious people can use to socially engineer you, and that's the term for con you mm-hmm. in the hacker parlance.
And
they
especially with
call
the...
you up, pretend that they're an old friend.
Yeah, and especially with the internet, I mean, it stays there for decades, even when you've long forgotten it.
Oh, yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So get in the habit of stalking yourself once in a while. You know, act like, hey, if I was trying to mess with me, what could I find out about me? Mm-hmm. You might be surprised.
And there's a sequel plan, Freedom, for coming out. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, actually, the sequel to Demon is called Freedom TM, and the TM is the trademark symbol. Mm-hmm. And it is a direct sequel, so it continues the story set out in Demon. And that is coming out in early 2010, once again from Dutton. Now, although it initially self-published Demon, it was later picked up by Dutton, Division Penguin, and did very well. As a matter of fact, it became, for 4 weeks, a New York Times bestseller. And it is available everywhere.
Will there just be one sequel, or do you plan on doing more in the series?
You know, right now, I really just want to do the one. I would like to do... There are definitely other books I want to do. I'm going to keep my hand in technology, though. I still have a consultancy here in L.A., and, of course, I want to do some more technology entrepreneurship. I'm probably going to spend the next 6 months or so dedicated to writing, but... And after that, I probably want to get back into the technology arena for a while. I think that's important to stay relevant.
Yeah,
and,
to stay up to date.
I've always found that I get more ideas doing other things, actually doing things, building things, interacting with people. I'd hate to be one of these writers who sit in the house just trying to think the next big idea.
What do you like to read in your spare time, and do you have a favorite author?
Well, yeah, like I said, Neal Stephenson is a big favorite. He just came out with Anathem, which is great. The good thing about Neal Stephenson's books is they're long. And when you like an author, the fact that the book is long is terrific. But let me think. I read Michael Pollan. I read a lot of nonfiction, by the way. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've read any Michael Pollan, but he wrote a book called Omnivore's Dilemma.
Yeah, I work at a bookstore, so I have to know it.
Terrific book, and I would recommend it to anybody. But that would be an example of some of the research that I've done for this and other books. Chuck Palahniuk, I can never remember this guy's name, but the guy who did Fight Club.
I like
his writing, too. He's just got a great sense of it. Just the way he turns phrases and his unusual perceptions of things, I think is always very interesting. But,
well, what do you like to do in your spare time?
See, I'm a big hiker. I like to go hiking. I like to game, definitely. I like to play the video games. And I like to mess around with technology, hardware, software. For those who have read my book, you might be amused to find out that I like to design things like camera systems hooked to networks, software that looks at the image on the camera, things like that. I'm a tinkerer.
And then for my last question, do you have a favorite TV show?
Oh, with TV. I have not watched TV in the last few years. In some ways, I feel socially eclipsed here, but let me think. There are some shows that I really like. I would say Entourage is the show I like. But the thing about me is, I really have to TiVo stuff because I'm not one who will wait for a certain time to watch a show. Like, I'm not waiting to see a certain show. What will happen is I'll find myself with a couple of hours and think, I'm kind of beat. Hey, let me see what I have queued up, and then I'll watch that. But I would say Entourage is a show I do like. Living here in L.A., I guess.
Okay, well, thank you very much for doing the interview.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. All right, take care.
Right.
Bye-bye.
And that was my interview with author Daniel Suarez of Demon and the forthcoming Freedom TM.
You don't have to be loony about books just to love reading. Bookloons is your corner bookstore in the Global Village, with columns and reviews in genres including classics, contemporary, fantasy, mystery, nonfiction, romance, science fiction, travel, and tales for teens and young readers. Bookloons updates every 10 days and currently has almost 11,000 reviews. To find out more, go to bookloons.com.
And that concludes this episode of Book Banter. Please join me next time on June 1st for my interview with author James Rollins. We'll be talking about his two new books, Jake Ransom and the Skull King's Shadow, and his forthcoming Doomsday Key. But for now, that's it for me. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, or you have an author you'd like to see me interview, please drop me a line at alexctalander@gmail.com. And if you haven't already and would like to join the Book Banter mailing list, just send an email to bookbanterpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening to Book Banter, and see you next time.